Phyllis, we're back, and we have Hans Tamamagi, who's a travel environment and science writer, and very interestingly enough, earned his doctorate degree in Australia. Good morning, Hans. How are you?
Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Hans.
Good morning, Roy. It's wonderful to be talking travel with you two gentlemen again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. We love your articles, and particularly this one. For those that are listening online, if you go to the site ttrn.com and go to Destination Canada and scroll on down to Bears, Birds, and Belugas on the Edge of the Arctic, you'll come across Hans's article, and there's a couple of photos in there that are quite spectacular, and the one that I need to ask you about is this one with the green coming out of the red. As you know, around the world, they've always talked about the green flash after a sunset, and it was in many of the authors have included it in their books, and I'm just wondering, could that be the green flash that you've captured in that photograph?
No, Roy.
What is it?
It's from Northern Lights.
I'm going to have to disappoint you on that one, Roy. That's the Aurora Borealis.
Well, Marcus knew that, of course.
The famous Northern Lights.
Yeah. That's really a super photograph. Absolutely beautiful. But you do recall the old green flash that's been talked about many, many years, where you suddenly get that flash of green just as the sunset comes down, but very seldom. But it's really a beautiful photo of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the Aurora Borealis is only one of the many wonderful features of Churchill, Manitoba. And it's quite interesting. They're absolutely, as you say, spectacular to watch, particularly in the winter night sky.
Yep.
But the Japanese are starting to flock to Churchill because they believe that a child conceived under the Northern Lights is going to be particularly intelligent. So there you go, Roy.
Is that right?
The intelligent children, you have to head up there.
Well, the green flash apparently didn't do me much good.
Well, I've not seen the Northern Lights, but obviously I've seen the Southern Lights many times, the Aurora Borealis, and that is phenomenal. Just amazing. It's difficult to describe it to anybody.
Yes.
Something you have to see. Bears, Birds, and Belugas on the Edge of the Arctic. What a wonderful, creative topic for your article. And tell us a little bit more about Hudson Bay and Churchill.
Well, I'd be delighted to, because this was one of the most exciting trips that I've ever taken. And it really is one of the most underappreciated places in North America. Churchill, Manitoba really is like going on a big game safari to ask the deepest Africa. It's really spectacular.
Right.
Here you are way up north. You're just past the tree line in the Arctic. It's all tundra. And it's very desolate and barren and wild in its own way, but in spite of that, it has terrific wildlife. And let me just very quickly tell you what the key ones are. First of all, it's most famous for polar bears.
Right.
And the polar bears tend to congregate there just before winter, in October and November, as they're congregating, ready to go out on the ice as it's freezing on Hudson Bay. But on top of that, as though that wasn't enough just to go there and see the mightiest carnivores on Earth, they also have two huge herds of caribou, about 400,000 caribou each. And in the spring and the fall, they migrate. So to go up there and see that kind of migration is absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
But actually, I've been saving my favorite to the third one here, and that is that in the summertime, a large group of beluga whales, about 3,000 of them, come and spend the summer in the mouth of the Churchill River, just as it flows into Hudson Bay, and it's bringing warmer water from inland, and I guess the belugas love to sit there and float and live in this warmer water, and that is absolutely unbelievably spectacular. The beluga whales are known as the canaries of the ocean. They really chirp and sing a lot, and they're also very ballet-like in their motion. And when we went out by boat there, there's hundreds and hundreds of them. And we had a hydrophone down, and we were listening to the chirping. And several of the belugas actually came over and were inspecting and kind of nosing the hydrophone, which is only like 5 feet away from where I was sitting on the boat. And I swear they looked me right in the eye and spouted the big fume of water up above them and kind of winked at me, and then off they went.
And I felt there was a little communication there.
There was.
Well, that's fantastic. You obviously put some great links on your in your article, and the link for the beluga whales was fascinating, and the photos were great too. So, if anybody's browsing through the article, click on the beluga whales link because it's a doozy, as we say.
One of my dreams, actually, Marcus, is to go back there and actually swim with the beluga. You
right.
can actually do that. There's, like as I said, there's so many of them in that estuary, and they're very friendly. I didn't have time on my trip, but I really would like to go back and spend about a week studying them and swimming with amongst them, and getting to know them a lot better.
Yeah, they're not much bigger than a dolphin, are they?
That's right. They're one of the smallest whales going.
Yeah,
I was going to say because I spent a fair amount of time in the Dominican Republic, and we had the humpbacks there, and of course they're quite large. And to watch them leap out of the water and flip over backwards is really incredible. And getting in swimming with them, I don't know, I might be a little nervous about that. But as long as they're friendly, I guess I'd certainly like to hear that report. We'd like to put a microphone in the water while you're down there, so we can
record that.
You might hear my heart beating too.
Very quickly.
How big is Churchill? As a town.
Well, Churchill's an interesting place. It's very historic, actually. It was actually founded way back in 1600, as you can imagine, the fur trading post.
Right.
And then they built a really nice fort there. Actually, a very attractive, big stone, thick-walled fort, and was protecting that strategic area with the Churchill River and Hudson Bay.
Right.
But these days, it's become a seaport, and it actually is one of the few Arctic seaports certainly in North America. It's the only one, but also in the world. And so it's got a population of about 1,100 people.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the seaport freezes over in the wintertime, so things get much quieter.
Right.
So in winter, the population goes way down. In the summer, the population with the tourists in the seaport, and of course, it's the terminus of the railway to bring wheat and minerals and ore to the seaport. So in the summer, it's about 1,100, maybe even more, with tourism. And in the wintertime, it probably dwindles down to a third of that.
Yes, I can imagine it to be a fairly unfriendly place in the wintertime. Not a lot of daylight and an awful lot of snow and very cold.
Yeah,
the all-terrain vehicles would give way to snowmobiles, I guess.
Exactly. It's a very desolate place, even in the summertime. But the desolation has a certain excitement about it. I mean, it's just like going to Africa, deepest Africa. I mean, it's not necessarily a friendly terrain to a North American who's accustomed to shopping malls. It's the same up there. And in the summertime, people just dash around in these all-terrain vehicles. But everywhere you see parked, these kind of rusting snowmobiles and rusting snow sleds and things that are just waiting for winter to pick up and come into use.
Right. Observing the polar bears, because there are so many there, how is that achieved? At a safe distance or in relative safety?
Yeah, good question. They have devised a wonderful way to travel up there for tourists, and they're called tundra buggies.
It's an amazing-looking vehicle.
Yeah, they're kind of like a large bus, but it's raised up about 6 feet off the ground by these huge tires that are about the size of a person, and they have open decks usually at the front and back where you can then peruse the terrain, and if you're lucky, see a polar bear. When I was up there, they took us out quite a distance from town to where these tundra buggies are parked, and even though it wasn't polar bear season, we had a wonderful time just looking at all the bird life and the desolate terrain, with the stunted trees. It's just past the tree line. It's in the permafrost area.
Right.
So it's very different from anything you've seen down south here, and we saw some wonderful birds and cranes and snow geese, but also at one point, out of the mist loomed this large caribou standing on a bit of a rise in this huge rack of antlers. It was just absolutely magnificent. So these tundra buggies are just the absolute way to go, wonderful way to see the terrain and explore it.
What time of year would you suggest our listeners, if they were interested in making a trip like this, what time of year would they plan it?
Yeah, I would certainly say that to see polar bears, you go in October, November. That's when they start congregating along the coast, and particularly in the Churchill area. But any time in the summer would be good for all the rest of it. Like, I went in July, and I really enjoyed it. That's when the belugas are there, you can see the caribou, you can just enjoy the terrain itself.
And you've got all the migrating birds there, of course, at that time of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, terrific bird life.
And what were the temperatures like at that time of year?
You know, it wasn't that cold. In fact, when I was there for the 2 days I was there, we had perfect sunshine. It would have been in the 70s.
Huh.
And it didn't drop down too much at night. But you know, you can't go out at night.
Once the sun is gone, it's...
Well, no, it's not the cold. It's the polar bears.
The bears.
Oh, the bears.
You wander around in the dark. You've got to have good visual.
Otherwise, you become somebody's meal.
Exactly. You don't want to carry a salami around after dark.
Tell us a little bit more about the Prince of Wales Fort.
The Prince of Wales Fort is absolutely magnificent. It's across the river from the town, across the river of Churchill River, and you have to get there by boat. And so we took a boat across, and when we got there, we actually had an armed guard. Like, it was amazing. So we had a fairly long walk up from the dock to the fort, which is a big, it's five foot thick stone wall.
It's outstanding. It looks amazing in the photos.
And you know, again, because it's up there, there's nobody around. So when you go there, like, I think we had a group of about six to eight people. We were the only ones there. And we're just wandering around this fort and looking at the old cannons, and you know, the slots that they used to fire through and climbing the ramparts. And all the time we're doing that, the Parks Canada guard was touring, was like an outrider, patrolling around us with his all-terrain vehicle and a shotgun and some other ammunition to make sure no polar bears came wandering around while we're doing this.
Right, and they probably weren't using ammunition. They were probably using tranquilizing shells, I would think. I don't know.
Again, polar bears, because in the summertime they don't get much food, they eat mostly seals in the winter off the ice, but in the summertime they get quite hungry. So they're very investigative. Now, they're not necessarily threatening, so you're quite right. They can scare them off, and what they actually do is they carry starter's pistols.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have tranquilizers, but they have starter's pistols, and they do get too close. They have heavier
artillery.
Would use in a pinch, but hopefully they can scare them off between getting the polar bear to run in one direction, not to run in the other. It should work out.
Yeah. Hans, a great article. Absolutely wonderful. A pleasure, as always, having you on the show. And
we look forward to the next time.
Yeah, for sure. With our nose pressed against the computer monitor, waiting for the next installment.
Okay. Wonderful chatting with you, gentlemen, and I look forward to speaking to you next month about the Gulf Islands.
Yeah, that's going to be great. We're looking forward to that one.
And that's home for you, right?
That's where I live now, yep.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Hans.
We'll look forward to it. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be joined, of course, by Mr. Johnny Jett, wherever in the world he may be. So stay tuned, and we'll be joined by Johnny Jett real soon. USA.